RP Plus is a spoken word news show produced by culturally diverse youth in the Regent Park area. Produced by the Regent Park Focus Coalition, the show profiles the art and culture of young people as well as issues to do with youth, health, the Regent Park, and other urban communities. Tune into the voices,
music,
and poetry
of urban community youth
on Regent Park Plus.
Tuesdays
at 7:30 p.m.
on CKLN
88.1.
Yo, 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 RP Plus Regent Park Radio is on the air. I'm your host, as usual, Calvin, and today I'm here with Constable Kevin Guest, who's also author of Youth Violence. Hello, Kevin.
How you doing?
How's it going today, Kevin?
Not too bad, thanks.
Kevin, could you tell me a bit more about yourself?
Well, I'm a police officer in the east end of the city. I've been a police officer for about 12 years, and one of my, I guess, interests is working with young people and trying to keep them safe.
Okay, that sounds good. Hey, I'm glad to have you on our show today. As again, for the second time ever on RP Plus, we will be taking calls again for you, our valued listeners. All right, so the number to call is 595-1655. That's 416 area code, 595-1655. Today we're going to be listening to this tape, pre-recorded from a talk that Rob Levine came to Toronto on March 21st to talk about gang violence in Toronto. And he's from LA, and he was discussing about what he thought gang violence in Toronto. He was trying to warn us about future gang rivalries coming to Toronto and how we should minister to our youth and talk to them. So we're going to play that tape, and Kevin, we're going to ask you a bit questions of what do you think about his thoughts.
Here today as a representative of the Hollenbeck Youth Center and the Inner City Games in Los Angeles. It is also a great privilege to have the opportunity to speak to a distinguished and dedicated group of individuals, such as yourselves. I have great admiration and respect for your decision to face the reality of gangs and related problems within your community before it gets out of control. Proper action now will prevent a large-scale dilemma later. Without question, these problems are solvable. They are solvable when rational people with varying perspectives and approaches, openly discuss, analyze, and implement strategies which emerge from such a dialogue. I have accordingly entitled today's presentation, Juvenile Crime, a Sensible Approach to a Difficult Problem. I emphasize the word sensible for several reasons. First, to underscore the importance of keeping emotional responses in perspective. The activities which accompany juvenile crime and gang-related behavior properly offend the sensibilities of law-abiding citizens. These activities will inevitably cause anger. There will be an instinctive reaction as to how to deal with these juveniles, which in many cases will be emotionally based. Second, to emphasize that logic and planning must be employed in dealing with these problems, and that when such skills are utilized in a systematic and consistent fashion, the results will be overwhelmingly favorable. It is much like a military endeavor. In such an undertaking, one must first identify the enemy. It is my opinion that the real enemy usually is not the child, but a host of socioeconomic problems which make the child vulnerable to adopting a lifestyle which is self-destructive.
Hey, Kevin, all right. Rob Levine emphasized the word sensible, like a sensible plan. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but is this the same buzzword that Mike Harris used to win his election, the common sense revolution? Up to this point, what do you think? What do you think what he's saying there?
Well, I think up to this point, to me, he's making sense anyhow. He does talk about it's not so much the fault of the youth, but what comes before. And when we talk about parenting skills and some of the environments that young people have to grow up in, certainly those are catalysts for behavior. But what it comes down to is, as young people get older, they're responsible for the choices they make. And essentially, sometimes they make bad choices. So correcting some of the things that come before, as far as what influences their choices, certainly we can help as a community.
All right, let's go to the second clip.
I believe, therefore, that the war must be undertaken on several fronts simultaneously. First, the criminal activities themselves. Second, the underlying causes of these activities, That is, those factors which create an environment where drugs and juvenile crime are perceived as sensible, viable behavior patterns. Third, an aggressive campaign on the borderline child or the marginal child. That is, the youngster that can go in either direction. The gang needs to recruit the marginal child to stay in business. Without him or her, gang growth will inevitably decline. Those of you who are here today must recognize that it is you and the efforts which you undertake which will be the critical difference in what happens to these children and your community. It must be remembered that both society and gangs are competing for new acquisitions at all times, that these new acquisitions are, in effect, new bodies, that the key population in the new acquisition market is the borderline child. During the early stages of gang activity, the borderline child will primarily be inner-city children. In the middle and later stages, the borderline child becomes any teenager. And make no mistake about it, these problems exist in Toronto.
All right, Kevin, who is this borderline child that Rob Levine is talking about? Does Toronto have any of these borderline children?
Yeah, I think we do have them. What he's referring to basically is a theory that was spoken about by Dr. Matthews, Fred Matthews. And in his theory, he speaks about three different distinct groups. There's a group in the center, which tends to be the ringleaders, the very hardcore, antisocial young person that needs long-term psychological, psychiatric help and assessment, something that certainly, as a police officer, I can never even imagine helping. In the middle is the borderline, and we'll come back to them, or I like to call them the gray area young people.
Gray area,
yeah. And then outside, surrounding, is the vast majority of youth. And I think this is an important point to make, that the vast majority of young people are young people that will never have problems, will never be touched by violence, will never want to get involved in violence. And I think that sometimes that point is lost. But getting back to the gray area, they're young people that, as he said, can go either way, that they can either be influenced by the antisocial aspect of the gang or group behavior, and I like to talk about the group behavior too in a couple minutes, or they can be influenced by that vast majority of young people and be very social. And sometimes there's just a mix-up between what is social and what is antisocial or delinquent, and that's where we come in. Whether it's you or me, we have a responsibility to educate that gray area or borderline that he talks about.
All right. Well, the gray area, you call it. He's right in this next clip. He's going to talk about his description of a borderline child.
Let's hear him.
The borderline child is to be distinguished from the hardcore gang member who may have gotten involved when he or she was 5 years old and began using drugs by the age of 10. This latter group is generally very difficult to reach until incarceration. The borderline child, on the other hand, is precisely the child that you want to reach before incarceration, and equally important, before the gang and drugs get a hold of him or her. He is much like the college graduate who's being recruited by rival companies. Generally, the company which appears to best fit the needs of the graduate will be the one selected. The same is true with these youngsters. It is imperative, therefore, that any plan includes aggressive recruitment of the borderline child while at the same time dealing with the hardcore juvenile population. Schools need to be involved in promoting youth centers and related activities. Posters, signs, and daily public announcements at assemblies or over the public address system need to be daily reminders to these children. Television and other media must likewise be involved. With these alternatives in place, and the message of alternatives being put out there, and active recruitment of these children, the borderline child will not go into the gang. Gangs will then be contained and will be an isolated target to deal with. I encourage all of you here today to remember that you are the difference. You can make the change. You can make it happen.
All right, Kevin, I think everything you told us to do, we have already done it already. I think Toronto, that's why Toronto's crime rate is kind of low. What do you think about that?
I agree 100% with you. We haven't, over the years, neglected our so-called borderline children. So I think that, like you said, we've done a lot of things. We've instituted education programs, parenting programs. Teachers have been educated about youth violence. And in turn, young people, the most important element, we've talked about this openly so that we stem any aggressive behavior from gangs. We have more of a problem with groups of friends causing violence more so than gangs themselves. And I think when he talks about things like that, I think Toronto's is well advanced in dealing with these problems.
Okay, well, I'm just going to remind the audience here that if you guys have any comments or any questions about gang violence in Toronto, if you think there's any gang violence in Toronto, call us at the radio station. We want to hear your comments. All right, let's go to the next clip.
At similar agencies in this critical endeavor. As to drug education, I would once again begin educating children by the third grade as to the actual drug use on the body and how it affects the body. Most juvenile drug users don't have a clue as to what they are doing with their lives and the risk they are taking by doing drugs. Most of these children want to live. Most of these children want to be healthy. They need to know that one hit of crack cocaine can cause so much vasoconstriction of the heart that they can die instantly, that they can have an immediate stroke. They need to understand they are risking everything to cross that line. And they need to know this before they have ever crossed it.
Kevin, what he was saying before is that when I was there at the conference, he was saying that for any kid there, if they ever get caught with marijuana or any kind of drug, they should just be gone straight to jail for a first-time offense, minimum 1 year. And if they're caught for a second time, minimum 5 to 10. What do you think of that?
I think it's pretty tough to throw somebody in jail for a year for possession of marijuana. And if indeed that's what he said, that's kind of scary if you ask me. I don't think that we'll ever see something like that happen in Canada. Of course, their drug problem down there, and they're dealing with a lot of other elements, particularly the border with Mexico as well, that I don't even think we can fathom their drug problem, which in turn probably points to the fact that trying to compare our youth violence problem or any other problem with the United States is almost ludicrous, because it's we don't have the different gun laws, all sorts of different elements that go into their problems certainly would never factor in on our problems. Very difficult.
Okay, well, I have another question about Toronto gangs. Do you really think there are really like Toronto gangs as he's exploding it to be?
Well, no, I don't think that there's a problem. Certainly there are gang connections across the border. There's no mistake about it. If you were to travel down into different parts of the United States, you would see similar graffiti. And whether that's our young people emulating the gangs that they see in the TV and the movies or popular music, I don't know. But
yeah,
there have been instances, of course, where we have had connections. But to say that we have a problem that was, problem in L.A. from 10 years ago is crazy, because we know L.A. 10 years ago in the late 80s was certainly a much more violent place than we see here in Toronto today. I mean, there's just no comparison.
I mean, well, he was saying, well, that's what they said about L.A. in the 50s or 60s, and then look what happened in the 80s, 90s. And I mean, like, Toronto, we're not a stupid city. We look at what everybody else is doing, and we kind of go around it so it never happened to us. We learn from others' mistakes. That's what I think. I don't know what your idea is about that.
Well, I agree with you. I think that we're doing all that we can in Toronto right now to address the problem of youth violence. Certainly, we're doing as much in Toronto as anywhere else in this country. And I think that Toronto, through our police service and the people out there and the boards of education and things like that, are pretty much leading the way in Toronto for Canada.
Yeah.
So that we can make a difference. And, it goes without saying.
Oh, I think we have a caller. All right, let's go to the phones. Hello, caller. Hello, caller.
Hi.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. I have a question.
All right.
Okay, so you have some friends and you're thinking of becoming involved in a gang, right? How do you discourage them? Like, what do you say to them? Like, they come to you and they talk to you about it, and as a matter of fact, they're trying to pressure you into doing it. Like, how do you get yourself out of that, and how do you discourage them from doing it?
Okay. Certainly, I think you have to realize that being involved in a gang, whether your friend is looking at it as something that's a social thing or they're looking at being involved in a gang for safety factors, has any of those two issues came up in the conversation?
Well, actually, that was just a hypothetical situation.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll be hypothetical.
Well, I don't really deal with gangbangers.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Well,
true.
I mean, Essentially, there's a couple of reasons why people, I mean, the gang element, there's something lacking in their own life, whether it's a self-esteem need that they want satisfied, they want a safety need, for instance. They're going into maybe grade 9 at a school that they're afraid of, and they want immediate friends, or a social need. They think that being involved with a gang is something cool to do. You as a friend, I mean, young people take up the most important role. I mean, it doesn't matter how many police are out on the street or how many teachers stand up in front of the class and lecture, but these young people have to take the leading role. And as a friend, you have to make your friends realize that a gang is an antisocial, delinquent group of people. The vast majority of Canadian society and society in Toronto don't believe in their values and their belief system. And that, of course, essentially, they're breaking the law. And in turn, when you break the law, you're breaking the peace and welfare of the whole city. Making your friend understand that is kind of tough sometimes. But at the same time, on a grassroots level, you have to make them understand that it's going to be their neck that's on the line. And when you're talking about gang, being involved in a gang, of course, you're talking about sometimes violence. You're going to have to get called upon occasionally to back up gang beliefs, and that could generally mean getting involved in violent behavior, drugs, and those kinds of things are, of course, self-destructive. So making them understand that, and of course also understanding that when somebody joins a gang that is organized, a lot of times they have to get involved in contracts, and you have to make your family, their addresses and phone numbers and things like that known to the gang, so that if you do want to back out of it down the road, of course, now you've incorporated your family and threats against them. So that, of course, is a huge consideration.
What do you think, caller?
Hello?
Hi.
Hello.
Hi.
That was really well put, actually.
All right. Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks.
And I'll call again.
Okay.
All right,
luck.
Take care.
Bye.
Well, there you have it, really. I mean, in a nutshell.
Okay, well, we're going to go back to the tape and see what Rob has to say about what he's talking about gang violence.
I work in the Excel program, administered by the probation department. Significantly, this program focuses on principles of self-esteem, drug-alcohol treatment, and parenting skills. Straight incarceration has not worked in the United States. It is well recognized that something new is needed. Learn from our mistakes. Don't follow us. Learn what we've learned now.
All right, what do you think he said about there?
Well, I guess he's talking about programs there. And I guess, he's kind of flip-flopped a bit, talking about straight incarceration and incarceration on the first offense. And I didn't hear him talk about that, but you said you were at the conference and he mentioned something.
Yeah, he did.
Well, I mean, he's in that little clip, I mean, he's talking about straight incarceration. It isn't the answer, of course, and it's not. There's so many different things that go into helping young people. And, incarceration may work for some. A boot camp may work for others.
Yeah, yeah.
Sitting down and talking to an adult for the first time about values and beliefs and respect and self-esteem, I mean, that could work. It's just so many different situations. Young people have to be treated as individuals, and in turn, when they're treated as individuals, they act as individuals, and I think that makes a big change in a young person's life.
Well, Ron Levine drilled it in our heads. He said that Toronto is unaware of gangs, and I'm not really sure about that, because if a shoplifter was caught at Walmart, it's for sure by 6 o'clock, Jojo Chinto is already reporting it. Like, just for anything. I mean, the media is already on it. Mm-hmm. And I don't really think that we're unaware of gangs. We know about gangs, but there's nothing really to report.
Well, I have to agree with you that we're talking about a very, very small percentage of young people that are involved in organized gangs.
Yeah.
And, some people say 3%, some people say 5%. The Toronto Star reports 10%. I'd probably say maybe 1%, if we're lucky, is pressured into being involved in a gang, and even less than that joins a gang. So, you're talking about a very, very small percentage of young people. If they're talking about the percentages, we'd be, essentially running into a gang member every time we turned the corner in a school hallway. And I think you could probably back me up on this, because you're closer to being removed from high school and in the college situation, but that's just not the case.
What exactly is a gang?
Well, a gang, I mean, by Canadian standards, is defined for Canadian law as any group of three or more people involved in deviant or delinquent behavior, which is basically criminal behavior. But I think what he's talking about is the Bloods and the Crips and organized gangs into gang uniforms, gang insignia, gang signals, all those types of different things that they talk about in L.A. Certainly we don't see to a large extent here.
I remember when I was a kid, I watched a cartoon called the Get Along Gang, and they were more than three or four little cartoon guys, and they were always up to good, but they're a gang, right?
Sure. So,
and for probably a small percentage of our listeners, like, a lot of the, I don't know, some of you guys might watch wrestling, and wrestling, one of their angles has been to incorporate a gang. And their latest gang, well, I guess 2 years ago, they started the NWO, the New World Order. Mm-hmm. And their whole idea was to, take over this faction of wrestling as a gang, beat up every other wrestler. Now, it's, a lot of people have followed it. I mean, they wear the shirts, they're part of the quote-unquote, you know, NWO gang, etc. Mm-hmm. And I have friends, we're into the NWO, but we're not gangbangers, we don't exactly, donate to poor and stuff, we don't do charities and stuff like that, but we will later on. But that's, it's not like we, do drive-bys and stuff like that, we don't beat up on people, we're just a fun, quote-unquote, gang. I'd like to check Webster's to see what the definition for gang is.
I think you'd probably find just a group of people with, similar values and like ideas. That's probably what you'd find under Webster's definition. We go a little bit further in defining it as somebody that's involved in, when we talk about criminal behavior, I mean deviant and antisocial behavior. Certainly that's what we talk about when we talk to young people.
All right. So what's the danger for believing every young person is in a gang?
Well, there's certainly a danger. I mean, you walk down the street and you see a group of young people and they're wearing a certain style. When I was in high school, there was a certain style. But now it's the baggy pants and the ball caps and everything. And for adults in the adult world, losing touch with what it is to be a young person, certainly... you'll find if everybody's believing this, if every young person's involved in the gang, you're going to steer yourself away from young people, and that's exactly what they don't need. They need support from the community, they need support from adults, and they need involvement in our...
Yikes, we got a caller,
Great.
All right, let's take the call.
Do you not think that this whole obsession with gangs and the whole question of youth groups, which, by the way, they've always been there, they'll always be there, is not just like a nice way to cover up a lot of racism?
Yeah.
And sort of systemically turn it into programs that will not only sort of propagate that, man, but just really institutionalize it, like LA, really, and it's not really a solution. It's more like really setting up a structure.
Yeah, well, like I said before, that is a hype question. Kevin, you have anything to say about that?
Well, certainly I've found that there's groups and gangs that are along all sorts of different socioeconomic and cultural lines.
Bay Street.
Bay Street, oh man!
But I think that you have to realize that certainly there are gangs like that, and there's, those have to be dealt with within their respective communities. But
14th Division.
But
14th Division?
At the same time, I mean, we have to get serious about it, because at the same time, if the community is not going to be willing to deal with that particular issue, then that's going to be lost, and we have to all deal with it. It's not a racial thing. It's not a socioeconomic thing. I mean, you can...
No, but it's being turned into that, man.
That's why it's so important for you and me to speak the truth. And when we speak the truth, then things get done, right?
That's what we're on here. We're trying to educate, yo.
Man, that's why I'm calling you for work, guy. Boys.
For real.
That's all I got to say with regards to that. And I just say, I think it's a good discussion. It's a good dialogue. It's certainly got to come up because it's certainly coming up in institutional centers where there's lots of money, where there's a lot of programs going into dealing with these things. And youth groups, man. Youth groups have always been around. There's punk rockers, man. There's skinheads. Those are youth groups. Those are gangs.
Yeah.
And how come they're not being targeted? The only groups that are being targeted are Latinos and Blacks, man. Mm. You know? That's what I want to ask, to everybody who's got the money is setting up these problems for programs for youth groups. And maybe that also shows that institutions are unable to provide what the youth really need, people that are coming from very post-traumatic stress situations, man.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're unable to provide proper assessment, proper counseling for people that are survivors of war, survivors of torture, man, that have come here, you know, escaping that, and tend to group and get initially labeled as gangbangers, man, when they're just hanging out with their own, and they need that kind of support because it's not provided elsewhere within this, you know, within this society. So that's all I
got to
say.
Okay. All right. Yo, thanks a lot, caller. Wow, that was, yo, she was hype. I wish she could come in and, you know, talk to me still. Yo, she has some good views. Do we have another clip?
In this regard, I would like to read to you a brief quote from a resource book which I consulted in preparation for this day. In discussing the economic power of a Detroit gang of the 1980s, the book stated as follows. The image of a poorly organized black street gang should be easily dispelled by the example of the Detroit-based Young Boys Incorporated. The gang was the forerunner of the Los Angeles-based super gangs of the late 1980s. This street gang was a highly organized and profitable gang. In 1982, Young Boys Incorporated earned $7.5 million per week, over $400 million annually. This economic power must be understood and effectively dealt with in designing a strategy. I can assure you, Toronto is considered a ripe market. In this one area, I would draw a major distinction between the youth who has been incarcerated and the one who is yet to go there. Generally, those kids who have been locked up for a meaningful period of time realize that whatever they were making on the outside, dealing drugs just isn't worth it. The reality of confinement and all that goes with it dramatically changes the picture. These children are very receptive to any type of decent job and generally to an education.
All right, Kevin, from your experience, what have you noticed in schools?
Well, I think, like I mentioned before, that it's not so much the organized gang behavior, but it's groups of friends that are getting together, whether it be for safety needs or social needs, and when they're met up with a different group of friends that maybe a threat goes down or intimidation or harassment or, as the last caller, on cultural lines, that they're standing up for each other, and so to speak, they've got each other's back, right? And when that happens, of course, they're making, uninformed choices. And when somebody makes an uneducated or uninformed choice, a lot of times tragedy occurs, and we've seen it time in and time out in the media. And like you said, it's not the good news things, but that youth are doing out there on a daily basis, but it's the bad news things. And I guess it's up to all of us, particularly the young people, to change that tide. But it's also up to the adults, like myself, to give the support there that's needed so that, as Mr. Levine says, he considers us to be a ripe market. Well, we take his ripe market and we make it quite stale. And, we do our own thing. And I think that's what it's all about. And I think that's what Toronto and really Canada is all about, is doing our own thing. And I think we're doing a good job. And we have to continue on. And I think I'll leave you with that. And what we can do to make proper choices is work together. We want to be consistent. We want to know the consequences of violence. We want to be informed. And when we're informed and consistent, we communicate with each other. And that right there, communication, is going to help us in the long run. And I'll leave you with that. Communication.
Well, yeah, well, Kevin, you've been a great guest. Just like your last name, Kevin Guest. Just ironic. What a coincidence. Well, Kevin wrote a book, if I didn't...